Some of the most popular guests we had on this year were the London Klezmer Quartet. They came in with their instruments and played for us. Ilana Kravitz, violin, Susie Evans, clarinet, Carol Isaacs, accordion, and Indra Burachevska, double bass. On today's music show, that was the London Klezmer Quartet, and they consist of Ilana Isaacs, Susie Evans, Ilana Kravitz, Susie Evans, Carol Isaacs, and Indra Burachevska. It says it here. It's got it wrong on this piece of paper, which has all of your photographs on it. Thank you very much indeed for coming in.
Thank you.
And thank you for playing. And what was that?
That was the Camden Patch Dance. That was a composition of Carol Isaacs, our accordion player, and she wrote it to reflect her surroundings in London.
Right. In Camden Town.
And I heard Camden. I thought, and there's a little bit of Camden Passage. And
exactly, yes. Correct. And yes. The market. And the canal, you know.
We've talked on this show before over the years about klezmer, but not for a while. So maybe we could do one or two basic things, like, for example, the word klezmer.
Vessel of song, from the Hebrew klezemer. And I can't say it with a fantastic accent, but, you know, yeah. That's the way it is. And vessel of song, so we are the musical instruments, we are the vessels of song. So as opposed to Yiddish song, which is actually the vocal tradition, we are the instrumental tradition of Eastern European,
yes.
Jewish, Yiddish-speaking communities, the language based around German with a smattering of Slavic languages, a bit of Hebrew.
And there's something very... very right about that expression, actually, isn't there? For a music which, like the whole culture, has been the subject of a diaspora. I mean, it's been spreading everywhere. So the idea that it goes in vessels is appropriate.
Absolutely.
Now, the fact that this is music that comes from Eastern Europe originally, but it gets everywhere. And the kind of music that you're playing here, is this a particularly, dare I say, pure kind of klezmer?
We would never presume to think such a thing. We like to think we have a more traditional flavour, let's say, than some other bands. We adhere to... we listen to a lot of old recordings. as source material rather than looking at just the written tunes in order to get the flavour of what makes klezmer different to other musics. So we actually listen to the ornamentation, the way that it's brought over, the use of the modes particularly, and particularly heterophony, this idea that two people can be playing the same tune at the same time, but it sounds slightly different. And it's said to possibly evoke the idea of Jewish prayer, where you start together and you finish together, but in the middle, there's everybody goes at their own pace almost.
Yes. And I mean, you hear, for instance, you hear klezmer in America having an impact via ragtime. I mean, you hear klezmer in Benny Goodman, but what you're doing, I'm wondering whether there's maybe even a specific, the fact that you're called the London Klezmer Quartet, is there a specific London version of this, would you say?
The London Klezmer sound? Well, absolutely, we are the embodiment thereof. I mean, I think the difference between the European and the American tradition, if you go back to those old recordings, is that something like Bell's so-called Romanian orchestra and the Jewish orchestra of the Ukrainian SSSR have this very melody-based way of doing things, with the heterophonic sound creating the difference, and they'll have a bit of harmony, but the harmony is very basic, and sometimes you can hear on these old recordings where they had 3 minutes the train wreck, where one person has one version of the chords and another person has the other, and they don't really mind terribly. So it shows that harmony wasn't that important. They didn't practice to get the chords right, as it were. And when you get to the American bands later on, the sort of late teens, early 20s, you get much more of this arranged stuff. They're still big klezmer orchestras, as they used to have in Eastern Europe when they had the number of players available. But you get a lot more of the arrangements, if you like. You get harmonies being brought in. They're not just diverging from the tune a little bit and then going back. They're actually doing sort of third, sixth, that kind of harmonic arrangement, and much more structured chords, the same thing every time around, that sort of thing.
What about the notion of the quartet? I mean, you seem to have everything you need here. You don't really need an orchestra, do you?
We are self-sufficient. Well, I think that's another thing that happened with the passage of time, the idea of the solo instrument, the clarinet. You could only have one clarinet in a band. You know, if you look at the pictures of the old-style orchestras, if they could have them, they had loads of melody players and quite a lot of players in the middle, mainly string players, the accordion, of course, quite a recent invention. Mm-hmm. We're very, very glad she's there because she can do everything. But in the old days, they'd have had these fiddlers going, and, you know, several of them doing it at different times. So you create that rhythmic effect that you get with a drummer. So if you don't have a drummer, you have a lot of fiddlers.
Yes, yes. Now, let's talk about the source material. I mean, you've mentioned recordings and there are things written down as well. What's the really important stuff here?
We use the tapes that were made off 78, and since it's not cassettes anymore, some of that material has fallen off the agenda, and we use the CDs that have been made. And one of our most important sources is Moshe Beregovsky, who was a Soviet Jewish ethnomusicologist. I can say that all in one go. And he went out into the field and did recordings. He recorded onto wax cylinders with Jewish communities around the Kiev area. And he put together an incredibly important collection, which is in Kiev in the National Museum. It's called the Vernadsky Archive. And sadly, actually what most of it does is just sit there to this day. Mm. They've actually managed to transfer about 40, 50 tracks, as far as I know. And the rest of it is sitting there waiting.
Still on wax cylinders.
Still on wax cylinders. And you can imagine the amount of time, effort, money that it will take to actually get it out into the public domain. So what we have is a lot of transcriptions that he made himself, and we use those. And by dint of listening to the other recordings, we work out what it might have sounded like. And I was very excited because there was one that was published in a book of his transcriptions, and we played it and we went, oh yeah, it must go with something like this. And then I actually heard the original recording, which came out on the one CD or of two or three that they produced, and we were fairly true to it, and I was ecstatic because I thought, well, it proves that actually we are hearing the style and we are internalising it a little bit.
But how incredibly frustrating to know that there are those examples there that you can't hear.
I went on a klezmer cruise down the river Dnieper. It was mainly Canadian Jews looking for their roots.
Right.
And it was an amazing experience. And I did try and get in touch in advance to say, you know, we're a bunch of Westerners coming and looking for our roots. Can we come and listen to that archive? And it was quite difficult to access. And you can imagine, wax cylinders, how are you going to listen to them?
Well, yes.
I don't know how that works.
No, no.
But yes, it's sort of, you're itching to get your fingers on it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the some of the characteristics of klezmer. I'm particularly interested in some of the modes and some of the ornaments, and I'm wondering whether maybe you could demonstrate the odd thing for us.
Well, let's put Susie onto this, on the clarinet.
Susie doesn't have a voice mic, I notice. So,
speak into this?
Yeah, if you bend down a little bit more. Yeah, go on. Try.
Okay, there's two main modes that we use in klezmer music. One is major and one is minor. People tend to hear them both as minor, which is interesting. But the first one, the major one, Frege-ish, it's a major, you can hear. You know, it's a major, harmonically it's major, but it does sound quite minor, because it's got that on interval. And then there's the Mischa-Berach, the minor mode, which just starts the note below, really.
So does that make it easy to go from one mode to the other, or are they kept apart from each other?
When you play in the major mode, the cadence is always on the minor below. So you've got, should we play like an example of it, do you think?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yes, I get it. Now, the ornaments are an important part of this as well, aren't they? And there's more than one sort. Can you perhaps show us a few?
Yeah, let's talk about the quintessential, what they call the quintessential Jewish ornament, the krechts. And that means the sob. It's like the catch in the throat.
Yeah.
And it is playable on the violin. It sounds like this. It's like the absence of a note. I can't sing, but if I could, I would sing something like, ay, ay.
Yes.
And if you listen to Jewish cantorial music, you get a lot of that. Do you want to demonstrate it on the clarinet? And people often say, well, how do you do that? And is my technique right? And you just say, well, whatever produces the sound actually is good. We have a lot of trills. You can hear us, you know. That sort of thing. And we have acacciaturas, as you'd probably call them in the classical world.
I suppose you would, yes.
And all those kind of things.
Mordants.
We're very mordant. And, you know, Carol manages to produce them on the accordion, some of these. And even the crest comes out.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Yes.
And then there's the laughter as well as the sobbing. So
violins don't laugh.
And now, when you say that one is sobbing and one is laughter, is that rationalization? Or are you, I mean, do you think this is the origins of them?
I think it's very close to speaking, it's very close to singing. And, you know, a lot of the tunes have crossed over from the tradition of singing without words on Friday nights, for example.
Yes.
Communities, ay, 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 and we just take those tunes and we play them. And if you listen to the register that these tunes are in, we're often, you know, within an octave, we're not sort of all over the place. We're not in registers that you can't sing in. And we don't move out very far. So I think there's definitely a very strong link. And people say it evokes those feelings.
Yes.
It evokes laughter. And if you read, say, the stories of Shlomo Aleichem, who was well known for writing in Yiddish stories of Jewish life, he talks about musicians all the time, the fiddle sobbing, crying, you know. The tradition of the badchan at the Jewish wedding was the master of ceremonies. And he was like an early kind of rapper almost. And he'd sit the bride down and then he would make up poems about her life. And in between his poems, the musicians would play. So they'd punctuate with him. So he'd say, little bride, you're going far away from your home and your family with your very, very fussy mother-in-law. And they go... You know, and sort of evoke those feelings for the bride. And there's a wonderful old recording, which was actually a theatrical piece. So it's a cod wedding. But you get the whole audience, the whole congregation, if you like, sitting there going, oh, at that point. So, you know, there's always an element of humour. But what I like about this music is the sort of slightly darker side to it. It's not all happiness.
No. I mean, in fact, each piece seems to contain both, doesn't it? There seems to be a kind of a happiness, a resilience, and also a kind of tragic undercurrent to the whole thing, or overcurrent, or whatever it is.
Oy vey.
You're going to play for us again.
We're going to play. Well, interesting you ask about the provenance of tunes. The first one I found on a recording by a guy called Bog Berkman, and it's called Klezmerola, and it's piano rolls that were recorded in the 20s and 30s, and he's interpreting them with his feet. So they go round, and it's his speeds. And A Gute Nacht is the first one. And the second one is a tribute to this, our Australian tour. Oh. Hopefully just the first.
Yes, we hope so too. Thank you.
the London Klezmer Quartet, and they were on our show in March, and they're coming back. They'll be touring in Australia from the end of February to the beginning of April, and there's a new CD, and you can find details of that if you go to the Music Show's website.